Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents You and I as Mothers, A Raw and Honest Guide to Motherhood by Laura Prepon. Narrated by Laura Prepon. For Ben and Ella and all the mothers. Introduction. A new kind of plus one. I'm a mom. The same day I joined the Motherhood Clan, roughly 360,000 other women around the world also gave birth. Maybe you're a new mother, or expecting to be one soon. It's also possible you're reading this book while your 12-year-old does homework, your teenager practices on his drum set in the basement, or you've just gotten off a call to your kid at college. No matter, I've written this book for us all. Today is probably the best time ever to be a woman. We women can run anything. Marathons, households, businesses, and countries. We can communicate at lightning speed, and our voices are finally being heard within our culture, shaping its future. 21st century ladies are not to be messed with. And still, we are humbled by motherhood. Which is weird, because we are neither the first moms on the planet, nor will we be the last. So how is it that something so ancient, commonplace, and downright universal remains so personal, powerful, and endlessly varied? Why is every woman so profoundly transformed by becoming a mother? I know I was. During my pregnancy, I was out to lunch with a girlfriend, and I asked her to share with me what she struggled with most as a mother. This was my first pregnancy, so I wanted to know from another working mom what to look out for. She peeked back over each shoulder, then leaned in surreptitiously, ready to share a secret. It's hard, girl, she whispered, as if she was supposed to have pulled off an A-plus in mommy class, but had come up with a shameful C. I could feel her disappointment in herself. It was awful. This scenario occurred on more than a few occasions. The whispering, the self-doubt, the apologetic tone. Not yet a mother. I could not for the life of me understand why. My rah-rah self thought, come on, it can't be that tough. We've all dealt with plenty of stress before. You got this. Little did I know, I was about to experience a shattering soul explosion of my own. I'll tell you my truth, and not in a whisper. I felt blindsided by motherhood. In the early days, I, someone who generally considers herself confident, felt insecure, clueless, and scared. I went from being the center of my universe to being displaced by a chubby-cheeked redhead staring up from my boob. I knew it was the natural order of things, but this was big. One night, my daughter was asleep, and I sat in bed crying. Ben, my husband, was listening to me patiently. I don't feel like myself, babe, I confessed. I lifted my head and looked him straight in the eye to deliver what felt like the scariest line ever. The woman you married is gone. The words hung in the room for a couple of seconds. You are different now, said Ben. You're a mother. He said it with such strength and nobility it cut directly to my core. I straightened my shoulders and lifted my head. I am a mother, I thought. And it's okay to be scared right now. In that moment, I felt a shift. A version of myself was disappearing, and a new one was taking its place. And this new me needed resources, stat. Ever since then, I've been reaching out, asking questions, and doing research. I wanted to know what was happening to me. What happens to all of us when we go from woman to mother? And how to take care of ourselves in the best ways possible on this incredible, heart-squeezing ride. And I've learned a ton. Fascinating stuff about the female brain and how it changes during pregnancy and motherhood. The amazing role oxytocin plays in all our lives. Effective ways of de-stressing. How to maintain career-family balance. Beauty and fitness tips. How to ask for help. And ways to keep the relationship with your partner strong and healthy once children are on the scene. And because good nutrition is incredibly important, I wrote a cookbook called The Stash Plan, and I'm the daughter of a gourmet chef. I've put together some healthy, delicious recipes for you. Some I've borrowed from other moms, and others I've created on my own. From quick protein fixes like the perfect hard-boiled egg, to pho, a soup recipe that brings the whole family together, something that is becoming harder and harder to accomplish these days. I continue to glean wisdom from experts and mothers who know the road ahead of me. I refer to them as my mom squad. And they are some powerhouse ladies, including Mila Kunis, Jenji Kohan, Daphne Oz, and Amber Tamblyn, plus some other badass friends who work unorthodox jobs while bringing up their kids. I'll also share some amazing stuff from researchers studying the female brain and my own amazing OBGYN. And I even sat down with a survival expert. They all offer fascinating facts and insights, and many of them share how they handle the daily struggles, uncertainty, and remarkability of being a mom. They give us tips on how we can take care of ourselves, physically, emotionally, and otherwise, as we do the most important job on earth. You will hear their voices pop up throughout the book, offering us their ideas and secrets and sharing their most humbling mom moments. I'll also be asking you personal questions, offering you the opportunity to reflect on your own life and how it has changed since you've become a mom. We'll also take a look at how other women mother around the world, getting a global perspective on maternity and considering all sorts of different ways of mothering. We live in a culture where motherhood is most often discussed in the context of raising children, and not the experience of the mother. For the first time, I was able to ask myself the hardest questions about my own unconventional upbringing, which brought me into confrontation with my darkest fears. The journey of writing this book has empowered me to confront the past, meet today's greatest challenges, and celebrate the deepest joys of my adult life. I hope you and I as mothers feels like an intimate, informative, and honest conversation between you, me, and my mom squad, as our real strength comes from dropping our defenses and sharing our truths. Let's get started. I'll kick off this conversation with how it began for me. Chapter 1. Ready, Set, Mother. My crash landing into motherhood. I was naked, wrapped in a shower curtain on a cold concrete floor. A long strip of duct tape bound my feet and hands behind my back, while a shorter one covered my mouth, rendering me mute. I wiggled, trying to free myself, but it was useless. My captor, a man in black military fatigues, circled the room menacingly. Frantic, I looked around at the five other women on the floor, bound and gagged just like me. He grabbed one of them by the hair, and she cried out in pain as he dragged her to the center of the room. "Make all the noise you want," he growled. "No one is going to hear you." "Cut!" A mob of crew members rushed into the scene. Duct tape was gently pulled from our mouths. I was lifted up and my hands were freed. Through the melee of props being reset, duct tape adjusted, and wardrobe tweaked, I hopped to the man in black to offer him direction. "On the next take, remember the power you're wielding." He nodded, taking in the suggestion. "When you speak to us," I added, "it's scarier to say the last line, like a simple fact. Make all the noise you want. No one is going to hear you." I was directing episode 10 of the 5th season of Orange is the New Black. It was the last day of filming, and we had several scenes in a janitor's closet, where five of my fellow castmates and myself were being held hostage by the character of Piscatella, a power-drunk prison guard. Although I've never had to direct myself while wrapped naked in a shower curtain with no use of my limbs, we finished the day successfully, and when I arrived home, I gratefully flopped into bed. Ugh. The next morning, I could barely lift my head. I was exhausted in a way I'd never been before. I was actually concerned about the depth of tiredness I was experiencing. My whole body felt like lead. If being a director was this exhausting, I had a problem. Directing was my lifelong dream. Even at 17, on my first acting job, That 70s Show, I would study everything the director did, following him around, asking questions. Eventually, I tracked down a teacher at a film school near the studio where we filmed the show. He was the father of a friend, and when he saw how determined I was to learn, he arranged to teach me his directing curriculum in the evenings, after both of us had finished our day jobs. When I finished the course, he ended up producing my next short film, and I was on my way. But here I was, directing a prestigious project that more experienced directors had vied for, and I was completely drained, wiped out. In an attempt to rally, I dragged myself downstairs to make what my husband lovingly refers to as my moonshine. An epic, organic, cold brew coffee made with homemade almond milk and simple syrup. This concoction never fails to get me going. I drink my moonshine every single morning. I even travel with my special coffee beans and my cold brew machine. I love this stuff. However, as I poured the coffee into my favorite cup, its aroma, which normally delights me, made me queasy. I did my best to ignore the signal and continued my usual cold brew chemistry, mixing the ingredients just so. The ritual itself gave me pleasure, and I was hoping the brew would do its trick. But I could only take a few sips, and those I could barely swallow. Something was definitely off. I leaned on the kitchen counter and experienced a hot flush of fever. My muscles felt weak, my head was pounding, and I was woozy. But I was finally beginning to put two and two together. Someone on the set must have had a bug and given it to me. I pulled on my sneakers and dragged myself out of the apartment to buy some cold medicine. Walking down my New York City street toward the closest pharmacy, I passed a vendor setting up his hot food cart, and the smell of sizzling meat produced a wave of nausea that made me lose my balance. I stumbled across the sidewalk and leaned on a building while I caught my breath. I did my best to act nonchalant for the passersby who were witnessing me doubled over and ready to vomit. And that's when it hit me. I'm pregnant. For a moment, the city seemed to come to a standstill, and I noticed only my own breath. I'm pregnant? I reached for my phone, tapped in signs of pregnancy, and saw the morning's itinerary read back to me. Fatigue, nausea, headaches, flu-like symptoms. That was me. In shock, I staggered along to the pharmacy, but instead of grabbing Theraflu and Sudafed, I filled my basket with pregnancy tests. Wanting to avoid any possibility of misreading the results, I purchased every version. Standard urine sticks, tests with digital readings, and tests with two-step digital readings. I grabbed a large bottle of water and started chugging. I was going to need to pee. As soon as I got home, I took all three tests and then laid them on the counter. I paced. As much as one can in the bathroom of a New York City apartment, waiting for 3 minutes to tick by. I stared at the sticks intently for any hint of a sign. Then suddenly, they revealed their results like a Vegas slot machine. Pregnant, pregnant, pregnant. I sat in the bathroom, my vision blurred with tears. I cupped my mouth in excitement and awe. I had never even had so much as a pregnancy scare. And here I was, considering how my life was about to change forever. I always knew I'd be a mom someday, but I didn't think it would happen right that second. Ben and I had been hoping to get pregnant, but not actively planning on it. So this wasn't big news just for me. I snuck into the bedroom with the digital test that clearly read, "Pregnant," in big letters. I turned on the bedside lamp and woke up my husband. "Babe," I whispered, "I need to show you something." I handed Ben the stick, and he read our fortune through sleepy eyes, which widened instantly. He pulled me into an embrace, overjoyed as the news rippled through him. "I knew it," he said, with a huge smile on his face. "I knew it." I bought every book about pregnancy I could get my hands on. I knew my body was about to undergo some big changes, and I liked to be prepared. I read all the books, watched videos, and talked to friends. I downloaded an app that gave weekly updates on what was happening in my body, including comparing the size of my baby to a fruit or vegetable. That first week, she went from a pea to a blueberry. I researched the best foods to eat while pregnant, bought books to read to my baby in the womb, and made a classical music playlist to play for her through my belly. Having learned some powerful nutritional wisdom in order to recover from health struggles in my 20s, which I detailed in my first book, I fired up a bone broth pronto. I wanted to start nourishing my baby as soon as possible. My pregnancy was pretty by the book, or shall I say, by the app, as every week my body mirrored the updates arriving on my phone. Backaches, bloating, round ligament pain, heartburn, butterfingers, crying, you name it, I went through it. All the books I'd purchased also covered these symptoms, so I felt assured that my pregnancy was par for the course. Our birth experience also went as well as possible, given that the umbilical cord was wrapped around Ella in such a way that she was unable to descend fully. After 18 hours of labor, we were faced with an emergency C-section. Within minutes of that decision, I was lying on a table in a brightly lit operating room. My arms were out to the sides, tied to two planks, crucifix style. A blue surgical sheet was propped up at my waist, so I couldn't see what was going on below. Ben was seated at my left shoulder, holding my hand as the anesthesiologist tested the numbness of my midsection. After a moment, the surgical team went to work, helping Ella make her way safely into the world. The precision, expertise, and care of my doctors was unparalleled. I breathed deeply as Ben stroked my hair and whispered in my ear about one day visiting the coast of Northern California as a family. I closed my eyes as he described the gigantic redwoods we'd show our daughter. He sketched the sky, the waves, and the sun hitting the mountains with his words. As Ben was directing my mind, the doctor directed the surgery. In a moment, you're going to feel a tug, she said. It will feel like a little, and then a lot, of pressure. I opened my eyes and looked at Ben. He smiled through his nerves. Okay, I said, not sure how much choice I actually had at that point. My mind went silent. Just inches away, there were sounds and pressure, but it all felt sort of distant. I held my breath. Seconds passed. The intensity in the room peaked and then released. Ella was out. And then she squawked. That's the only way I can describe it. It wasn't a cry or a shriek. It didn't come with any particular feeling. It was simply a squawk of life. Her first hello. The sound of her voice tore through my entire being. It woke up a part of me I hadn't known was there. I tried to inhale, but was choked by emotion. I ached to touch her, but my arms were restrained while my belly was being sutured, so the doctor handed Ella to Ben. I couldn't stop crying or catch my breath. He brought her closer to me so I could see her. The mother in me was born. For the next 2 days, we stayed at the hospital to be monitored after the surgery. After Ella's grand exit from it, my abdomen felt like a vacant room where the original furniture, my organs, had to rediscover their places. I had to wear a special compression garment around my belly. Still, standing up made me feel like I was being ripped in half, and I doubled over just trying to walk 5 steps to the bathroom. I had to ask Ben to stop telling jokes because laughing was downright painful. Even with all of this, my doctor assured me that everything would settle and find its way back home, which it ultimately did. The human body is a marvel. The feeling of bonding with my husband and this new life is almost impossible to put into words. Together, we discovered Ella's perfect gripping fingers and impossibly tiny toes. And we gazed deeply into her eyes when they were open. I felt exhausted, relieved, and madly, madly in love. It was pretty awesome. And then we were released into the world. Riding in the taxi home from the hospital, we now had a car seat between us, carrying our 2-day-old daughter. Ben and I looked at each other. Our faces weird mixes of fear and excitement as we started this new chapter of our lives. It felt like just a minute before, Ella had been in my belly, and now she was here, doing her little squawk like she ran the joint. It was surreal. A few days later, I was sitting on the bed, staring into the middle distance, and being bound and gagged on a concrete floor was starting to sound good. I had been thrown into a type of sleep deprivation that blurred the lines of reality as I knew it. Sure, I'd pulled all-nighters before. I'd experienced brutal 23-hour workdays and long nights of debauchery, but nothing like this. As those early days unfolded, I couldn't seem to figure out how to take care of Ella. My maternal instinct was there. I felt love beyond anything I'd ever known. But I was so afraid that I was going to mess up and she would somehow get hurt. And on top of the fear was frustration. I'm a prepper, a researcher. I like to study things. And I couldn't find a single book I could relate to. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't ace this. A horrible insecurity welled up and threatened to drown me. I felt crippled by inadequacy and self-doubt. I thought I had gotten rid of all that stuff years ago, and yet here it is, swallowing me whole. Meanwhile, my hormones were all over the place. Tears ran down my face, and they just wouldn't stop. My eyes were blurry from the constant stream of tears pouring out of them. I cried so much that I became dehydrated. I cried tears of fear that Ella might choke on her milk, tears from the pain of my C-section incision, tears of joy watching Ben bond with Ella. I felt, for the first time in my life, totally out of control. Other things started getting weird, too. I used to pride myself on my memory. I could remember the names of waiters and waitresses from years before. Entire scenes of dialogue were a breeze to memorize. I could recite the names of every single one of the 200 Orange is the New Black crew members. Yet now, I was spending 30 minutes looking frantically for my keys, the ones in my hand. As the days passed, little by little, I got stronger. I started to trust my instincts again. I finally realized that hormones are real and that they were responsible for so much of what I was experiencing. I wasn't crazy. Our confidence as parents started growing, and we figured out ways to get more precious sleep. Finally, when I was able to rest, cook, and move my body again, I felt my sanity start to come back. After 6 weeks of maternity leave, I returned to work. Thankfully, I started to feel like myself again, an entirely different version of myself, with a completely different lifestyle, but myself nonetheless. I finally realized there's no mastering this stuff. But what helps me most is sharing my experience with other mothers, hearing theirs, and continuing to learn as we go on this incredible adventure. Questions to consider. How did you feel when you first saw your children? Which parts of mothering felt easy and natural from the start? Which parts have been more challenging? How have you seen yourself grow? Chapter 2. How were you mothered? Looking back in order to look forward. Oh my God, I'm turning into my mother. You know the feeling. For me, it's usually when I hear myself using her phrases. Like when I say that someone has bats in the belfry. An old-timey phrase meaning they're crazy. Or muse that hunger is the best seasoning when a guest compliments my cooking. And when I crawl into bed with a glass of wine and a bowl of crunchy, salty treats, she called them nibblies, that's when I'm sure I'm turning into my mother. We're all affected by our parents in many ways, from repeating their patter or habits to the way a face is held, a quick response or lack thereof, the way you either chill a room or warm it up exactly the way your parents did when you watched them as a youngster. My daughter, now a toddler, copies words I say, tries on my shoes, and wants to play with anything I have in my hand. She hangs out with me in the kitchen and raises her arms up saying, "Up, up," until I pick her up and give her a better view of what I'm cooking. She even watches my expressions and tries her own versions of them. I've been told I concentrate with a furrowed brow, a physical trait my father had too. Recently, Ella looked straight at me and furrowed her brow, and I saw a glimmer of my dad. This perception of him, coming back to life through my kid, overwhelmed me with emotion. Now that I'm a mother, I find myself thinking about how the parenting I received affected me, and still affects me, now more than ever. And it's not just the good stuff, but also the quirky stuff, as well as the bad. While I am a true proponent of "you are responsible for your actions," a positive notion I gleaned from my mother, how we were parented or not parented affects us. How could it not? My mother, Marjorie, always looked like she steps off the set of Dynasty. She never left the house without her hair and makeup done perfectly, complete with false eyelashes, and big hair with swooping bangs a la Crystal Carrington. Her daily uniform consisted of high heels, black silk slacks, a loud patterned silk Pucci-style shirt, and a wide elastic belt with a large gold buckle accentuating her slim waist. Liberace-esque rings covered her hands, and as a child, I wondered how she could gesticulate with her slender fingers under the weight of them. I think that because she grew up with nothing, she wanted people to know that she was a doctor's wife. My mother had as a got guide that she would dog-ear and underline. She liked to go to the top restaurants in New York City, try the dishes, then come home and perfect the recipes. She would do her cooking into the wee hours of the morning. Our household had no rules, and my four siblings and I often refer to it as Wild Kingdom. Although some of us needed more structure than others, I survived well with so much freedom, and I would often walk into the kitchen, after midnight, to revel in my mother's latest culinary obsession. During her Peking duck phase, I found her standing at the counter, a large plucked duck sitting on a pan in front of her. With elegant swooping motions, she sewed up the duck's skin with a large needle threaded with cooking twine. "You have to sew up all the holes so no air escapes," she instructed me as she turned back, concentrating on the task at hand. Her glasses hovered just above her nose, twine tied in a small bow at the bridge of her glasses, with the other end of the twine tied to a little hair clip that she clipped to the top of her head. A contraption she'd created so that her glasses never touched her nose, so no indentation could be left. To this day, I wear lightweight glasses that don't leave marks. Once she finished with the twine, she pulled a bicycle pump onto the table and stuck its tip into a tiny opening in the duck's skin. She told me to hold it in place as she pressed down on the pump. I climbed up onto a chair next to her and did as I was told. A loud pshhh sound filled the kitchen. I laughed as she continued to press down, the tip of the pump slipping out of the skin. "Hold it tight," she said, enjoying the moment thoroughly. "It's slippery," I giggled. As she put the nozzle back into its place, she instructed her midnight sous chef, "You have to get air between the skin and the meat. Pssst. That's how the skin gets crispy when you cook it." She continued pumping the bicycle pump a few more times, then removed it to sew up the last remaining hole. She then proceeded to untwist a wire hanger as she asked why I wasn't in bed. "If you hoot with the owls at night, you can't soar with the eagles in the morning," she warned as she poked the hanger through one of the duck's eye holes and out through the other one. With a graceful nonchalance, she molded the hanger into a hook, off which the dead duck could hang. She pulled up the whole contraption, duck attached, checking it for strength. It was quite a feat. The next day, I saw the same duck hooked to my mother's closet door with a large fan blowing on it. She exited her oversized closet in her usual outfit, pulling on a long fox fur coat as I observed the duck gently swaying from the breeze of the fan. "You need to dry out the skin. That's how you get the signature crisp," she declared as she sashayed out the door. My mother had passion. Her cooking allowed her to express her artistic sensibility, her creativity, and her joie de vivre.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?